John Allen presents the Creepy Crawl Podcast.
Get your creep on. Get your creep on. Oh, hey, creeps. Shit, you seem to have caught me in a Missy Elliott moment. Well, thanks for letting me know we were recording, Woodrow. Well, I guess it's obvious, Get Your Freak On by Missy Elliott will be our inaudible, unlicensed intro song today. I was singing Get Your Creep On because that makes it legal. I don't know, maybe it doesn't. Anyway, welcome back to the Creepy Crawl Podcast. I am your one-man bacchanal, your Ayatollah of rock and roll, John Allen. Behind the scenes, but mainly in my fleeting mind, is co-host Woodrow. And Woodrow would like to give a quick shout-out to all who have been helping the show. If you would like to be just like these sexy MFers, you can do so by going to patreon.com/creepycrawl. You can also go to Venmo at jonathan-allen-154. And do be sure to follow the show on Twitter. That is at writer John Allen. Do I have to say it again? No H in John. So today's research occurred on March 23rd. And guess what, creeps? Guess what happened on this day in history in 1998? You guessed it? Yep, you were right. The epic film Titanic won 11 Academy Awards. But most importantly, it marked that moment in history where no one will ever again board a boat, head to the front, and not shout, "I'm the king of the world," while thinking it's somehow original and funny, which it most certainly is not. So, creeps, today's episode is all about serial killer Patrick Kearney, who, like Herb Baumeister and many others, was a gay man who murdered his own community, mostly. A tragedy that, of course, makes no sense. The gay community was much maligned. Well, it is much maligned, but, man, think about it in the 70s. As if they didn't have enough problems, then they have this prospect of a killer amongst them. Kearney was dubbed the Trash Bag Killer. Well, we're about to find out that Kearney also was a trash bag human. So with that in mind, let's explore. I invite you to nuke some pizza rolls and put on your jammies and creepy crawl with me. Patrick Kearney was born in East L.A. in 1939. You probably don't know that song, but it was a parody song from the 80s by Cheech Marin, I believe. Kind of like a Weird Al knockoff of Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. But I'm rambling because you're probably not old like me. Now, Patrick Kearney, this monster, he was the oldest of three children, and by all accounts, grew up in a normal, well-adjusted household. However, Kearney was small and quite sickly as a young boy. He was deemed strange by his classmates and soon became the target of bullying. Bullying really does have to stop because we've seen this over and over. It's not a hard cycle to catch on to. You bully people, they're going to just fucking go bonkers. Not all the time, but a lot of the times. There's nothing good that can come from bullying. So, if your kid is bullied, well, go beat the shit out of the kid that's doing it. And if your kid is the bully, spank his ass. Now, over the course of his childhood, Patrick Kearney was teased and taunted mercilessly, by his peers, and this had a profound effect on his overall self-worth and personality. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you get beat down emotionally. I'd rather take an ass-whooping, I think, than be bullied all the time and to have your feelings heard. And, you know, especially when you're small and sickly, you're being taunted and bullied over things you can't control. It's bullshit, but that's how kids operate. I think it's getting better these days, but I don't know. I know back in the 80s when I was growing up, holy cow. We would bully, we would taunt, we would do all the stuff back and forth, and promptly at 3 o'clock, we would go to this special little area down by the creek, just where the little reservoir ran dry, and everybody would circle around and yell, fight, 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 and two kids would beat the shit out of each other, and no one videotaped it, nor told their parents, so times have changed. Now, for Kearney, by the time he entered his teen years, he had become severely withdrawn and had begun having fantasies about murdering his classmates. These are the same classmates who had bullied him. Unbeknownst to his father at the time, a quiet afternoon of father-son bonding would further cement Kearney's fixation on violence when the older Kearney taught his son how to shoot a pig as a teenager. And Kearney became obsessed with killing pigs, even going as far as cutting open the pigs and rolling around in their entrails when no one was watching. Welp, we know how I feel about animals and children, and we already know now that Patrick Kearney is the tallest pine in a forest of douche trees. I know it sucks and I feel bad for him with the childhood, but don't fuck with animals. Throughout his high school years, Kearney fell deeper and deeper into these violent fantasies and lost further touch with reality. He lived in Texas for a short time and eventually moved back to California, where he worked as an engineer for the Hughes Aircraft Company. In his personal life, Kearney was a skilled pickup artist in the gay community and also fluent in Spanish, and these are attributes that would later help him during his murders, because again, his MO, if you haven't picked it up from my intro, is luring in fellow gay men and, well, killing them. Once graduated from high school, Kearney joined the Air Force, where he met a fellow named David Hill. Although Hill was married at the time, it was a sham. Hill was, in fact, gay, so he and Kearney began having an affair. Of course, the marriage was, you know, for appearances for Hill, because that's just what people did back then. Now, the two men fell in love quickly, and after serving their time in the military, David Hill left his wife to be with Patrick Kearney. The two soon started living together in Culver City, California. Their relationship was not without its strains, as the two argued frequently. Now, that's not unusual. Any couple, straight, gay, whatever variation, under the rainbow. I use the term rainbow because I think LGBTQIA+. It's so many fucking letters, and it's so hard to... I love the term rainbow because I'm an ally, and there's already the rainbow flag. I think rainbow just is more of an all-encompassing word for that community. It's a lot better than trying to memorize letters because it's a lot to memorize. But anyway, like any couple, they had their arguments, and they kind of began arguing frequently. So Kearney, he would go out for long solitary drives, and after his arguments with David Hill, he would pick up male hitchhikers or men from gay bars. Eventually, David Hill left and went back to his wife. In 1962, Patrick Kearney picked up a 19-year-old hitchhiker on his motorcycle. After driving the young man to a secluded spot, Kearney shot him behind the ear, which was the same way he had learned by killing pigs. After the victim was dead, Patrick Kearney sexually assaulted his body. It would go on to be a recurring theme. So, spoiler alert for those who have stomachs that are not iron. He has sex with corpses. He is a necrophiliac. Kearney murdered two other boys over the course of 1962. His first victim's younger cousin, sadly. How bad is... I mean, that's really shitty for that family. And another young hitchhiker from out of town. And it was all in the exact same fashion. You know, hitchhiking was 1962. That's probably as common of a way to get to a place as catching a bus or riding your bike. But I just can't get over this sex with a corpse. That, to me, is school on Christmas morning. No class. Now, Kearney only stood 5'5" tall and had a very slight build, so he typically preferred victims of greater stature than his. I'm not sure why. I think it might go back to that bullying thing where he finally has control. Because honestly, with serial killers, it's all about control. That's what it comes down to. So, given that this was sort of his, I guess, fetish in a way, Kearney was forced to resort to a system of subduing his victims that was unlikely to fail or create situations that would place himself in physical danger or cause unwanted, you know, exposure to the authorities. Now, creeps, if he's 5'5" and you can measure a man's sexual presence by shoe size, I'm thinking Mr. Kearney bought his footwear at Baby Gap. Yeah, I'm going to verbally castrate this professional-grade chucklefuck later. You know, creeps, I'm looking at the TV. I always have to have like a billion things going at once. I have to have music. I have to have the TV on mute, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if it's like a comfort thing with the Asperger's that I have, blah, 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 blah. But I'm looking at a commercial for a new... So it's Pepsi Mango. And that just really irks me. That's fucking disgusting. Who would have ever... I just don't understand. How could that be good to anybody? I know I'm weird. You know what? I'm fine with being weird, though. Because if you think about it, who has ever been a mogul or famous or impactful in the world? That's normal. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say if you become like everybody else, then you're really nobody. Words of wisdom. Huh, Pepsi Mango. So, the next year, David Hill left his wife again and returned to Patrick Kearney. David, you are doing life wrong. You went back to this dodgy wanker. Do you return to the site of car crashes too? It annoys me. The pair settled into a home in Culver City, California. The next murder wouldn't come until 1967, when David Hill and Patrick Kearney visited one of Hill's friends in Tijuana. It seemed that Kearney's tumultuous relationship with David Hill sort of drove his impulses to kill. Kearney would kill again in Tijuana, Mexico. The victim has never been identified for some reason. Kearney only knew him as George. Kearney shot George between the eyes while George was sleeping peacefully in his bedroom, like the cowardly lion he is. After killing George, he moved the body to his bathroom, where he sodomized it and began to dismember it and skin it with a knife. He then pulled the bullet out of the man's skull with the knife and buried the body behind the garage before returning to California. That is something to note, that he took that bullet out of the man's skull. Because Patrick Kearney, well, we're going to later find out, he was a genius. He was intensely intelligent. And it's probably why he got away with this for so long. He was sort of dodging the forensic squad before most people even knew a forensic squad existed. So there seems to have been something about Kearney's relationship with Hill that, so when they aren't together, a lot of things go bad, but when they are together and it's harmonious, he seems to resist his urge to kill. So when David Hill left once again in 1971, Patrick Kearney began looking for victims. Following his breakup with Hill in 1971, Patrick Kearney descended into a years-long murderous rampage. We're talking brutality, folks. We're talking... It's one thing... I don't know. I still think necrophilia is rape because it's not a living person. I realize that, but hello, no consent there. But he just cuts off limbs and... We'll find out why he gets the name Trash Bag Killer. But he's sawing off limbs with a hacksaw. He's a fucking scourge. As time passed, Kearney greatly refined his modus operandi, which, if you've ever wondered what MO stands for, now you know. And this enabled him to carry out his crimes much more efficiently and frequently. Again, creeps, the man was a genius. Starting in 1974, Kearney is estimated to have committed murders on an almost monthly basis. As mentioned in the Herb Baumeister episode, the police radar pinged very softly back then when dealing with the gay community. Very sad. And it's getting better again. It's not where it should be, but this is what it was. Now, I do wonder, because David Hill, did he know anything about what went on in Tijuana with that victim, George? It's going to play out later, but how could he have not known? I, by the way, am looking for new sponsors, so this next segment... I am going to show these potential sponsors what I can bring to the table. I have created a product that we all need. And you're going to hear my commercial for said product right now. Fellas, have you or a loved one ever wondered why you're tolerable? Have you ever wondered what you can do about this disgusting thing called decency? Introducing Douchebag Mag. This is the magazine for guys looking to be a laughingstock without even knowing it. For just one yearly subscription of the douchey price of $69.69, you too can learn the way of the douche. This includes... how to show people at BW3s during UFC fight night that you think you can fight because you're drinking beer and you're watching fights on TV and wearing an Affliction shirt. You can also learn how to make your basic car really loud or your truck really high off the ground. Also, learn how to flash a peace sign in every photo, how to call your girlfriend or wife bro, and how to use the words woke or snowflake. But wait! Fear not, ladies. We have a magazine for you, too. Introducing Douche Hag Mag. This is for the same low yearly price of $69.69. Ladies, you, too, can learn the ways of the female douche, including friend-zoning nice guys in favor of the same readers of Douchebag Mag over and over again, and then complaining about your love life. You will also learn how to bring down other women to placate your insecurities. And finally, how to watch television shows like The Bachelor, The Kardashians, and any of the Real Housewives. But wait, there's more? Order now and receive two, yes, two free gifts. An Ed Hardy bedazzled t-shirt and the White Guy's Guide to Douchery, including segments on growing dreads, getting Chinese letters in a tattoo, and complaining about why we do not have a White History Month. Go to www.iamadouche.edu or call 1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888-1-888 1-1-Douche. That's 1-888-11-Douche. Because, hey, who wants to be normal and light? Grab a Monster Energy drink and your vape pen and douchify yourself today. Well, creeps, how did I do? Do you feel like buying the douchebag mag or the douche hag mag? I don't know. I think that I could be the next, I don't know. Who sells a lot of shit? Oprah? Martha Stewart? So back to Patrick Kearney. He is now broken up with David Hill. His mind begins to unravel. He began picking up hitchhikers, men from gay bars that he frequented, and boys as young as 8 years old. Yes, fucking gross. 8 years old. Most of the men he targeted resembled the bullies who tormented him during childhood. The same can be said for children, even. Come the fuck on, dude. Get over it. I just don't understand. I mean, I understand a little bit. I've got a list in my head of people that, maybe screwed with me once upon a time in high school. And I wouldn't seek them out, but if I saw them in a grocery store, I might throw a headbutt and, a stone-cold stunner or something like that. But, again, I'm weird, but I wouldn't seek somebody out like that. But he's looking even at little children now as this fantasy of revenge from these bullies from so many years ago. Now, this necrophile, Patrick Kearney, he became known as the trash bag killer. And this is because his method was putting body parts and corpses into large plastic trash bags and leaving them on the side of the road. Disgusting. He would take a hacksaw and maybe cut off the feet, put it in one bag, cut off the hands, another bag, torso, head. You get the idea. The crimes took place in 5 Southern California counties. Pretty much it went the same. Once the victim was in his car, Kearney would drive left-handed, and once he was certain no one could see the car, he would shoot the victim with his right hand. At first, it doesn't seem very much of an impassioned killing, like strangling or stabbing or something like that. It's kind of, I don't know, huge lack of a better word, boring as far as a serial killer goes. Just shooting a person once, but we'll get to why when it becomes impassioned. After shooting them, he would leave the body propped up in the passenger seat so that the dead person now just looks like maybe a passenger, a normal passenger in the car, maybe slumped over to the right, maybe sleeping, that sort of thing, and drive to a secluded spot where the impassioned malice would begin. And he would sexually assault the bodies, of course, before dismembering them with said hacksaw. And, of course, he would then place the dismembered parts of the victims in trash bags and dump them across different parts of the highway. Although Kearney primarily preyed on young men, there were known child and adolescent victims as well. And it makes your stomach churn. If you don't want to hear about it, just fast forward like 30 seconds or play a quick game of Best Fiends, the best app on the iPhone right now. And you can get it in the iPhone store and keep sponsoring me. So, naturally, because old Pat Kearney was a smoldering toilet fire, he had to include children. Kearney's youngest victim was a child by the name of Ronald Dean Smith. And this poor kid was only 5 years old. I mean, a 5-year-old cannot remind you of anything bad in life. It's so pure. It's like fucking hitting a puppy or a kitten. It's so, so sad. Kearney was a genius, but man, he just had no emotional quotient or empathy. I mean, sociopath, psychopath. He was down the wrong path, I know that for sure. Now, Ronald Dean Smith, age 5, he disappeared in Lenox California on August 24th of 1974. His tiny little body was discovered in Riverside County on October 12th of 1974. So, what is that? 2 months that his poor family, his parents, grandparents, brothers, sisters, didn't know where this little five-year-old is, and then this is how they find him, chopped up like nothing, thrown in garbage bags. It's disgusting. Then there was Merle Hondo Chance, only 8 years old, of Venice, California, and he vanished on April 6th of 1977 when riding his bicycle in the vicinity of Kearney's place of work. Later, Kearney would say that he smothered the boy, took his body home overnight, did the disgusting deed that we know he liked to do, and later disposed of the remains in the Angeles National Forest off of Angeles Crest Highway, which is about 11 miles north of Altadena, California. Now, Merle Chance, his decomposed remains were discovered on May 26th of 1977. Kearney, Patrick Kearney, what a tampon tunnel. Killing toddlers because, what, he's as tall as one? I think Napoleon complex is too kind, because Kearney wasn't complex. He was basic as fuck when you really look at it. On June 16th of 1976, Shitstick Kearney killed Michael Craig McGee, only 13 years of age, of Redondo Beach. Records confirm that McGee had a lengthy history of juvenile delinquency, so of course Kearney claimed to have picked up McGee hitchhiking from Inglewood Avenue near Lenox to Torrance. According to the cops, Kearney befriended the boy and invited him to attend a camping trip to Lake Elsinore over the course of the weekend. Kearney then perceived McGee as a threat because McGee was talking about his criminal exploits and asking Kearney about the location of burglar alarms in Kearney's home. So, without warning, big tough guy Patrick Kearney shot the young kid. Later, when interviewed by detectives, Patrick Kearney implied that he had destroyed the remains of the child, stating, quote, "I disposed of the body. You aren't going to find him." It's just so gross. What a fucking gross, greasy troglodyte. Creeps. It looks like Kearney abused and killed children and animals. So, Woodrow and I are invoking the children and animal rule for this edition of the Woodrow Comedy Minute. This means that the genetic defect Patrick Kearney will have his underwhelming genitalia phonetically gutted like a one-eyed walleyed fish. Are you ready, Woody? What? What do you mean my breath smells like I ate a diaper found at a truck stop under the sun all day? Screw you, who cut your hair? 1980s pro wrestling? Well, you started it. No, every time we try to do the jokes, you know what? You're giving me flashbacks of that pencil stab fight behind that 7-Eleven in Montauk last year. Okay, creeps, joke one. Patrick Kearney's schlong is so small that when he thought he was receiving oral, it was really his boyfriend using it as a toothpick to get kale out of his teeth. Nice, I support this, Woodrow. Let's destroy this cretin. Number two. Why did Patrick Kearney name his penis Jimmy Hoffa's body? Because no one can find it. Great job, Woodsy. You linked it to a conspiracy as well. That is how you stay on brand. Okay, final one, creeps. Let's bring this trash person down. What happened when Patrick Kearney had the biggest erection of his life and began walking towards a wall? He broke his nose. Ha! Call the Undertaker. Kearney just got buried. And That's our Woodrow. Back to the show. The California trash bag murders case officially began on April 13th of 1975, and this was when the mutilated remains of Albert Rivera, age 21, were discovered near San Juan Capistrano. By November of that year, another six bodies had been found in Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, and San Diego counties. Now, Kearney and Hill eventually reunited in 1977, just about the time that they would be caught. I say they, but we'll get to that. I'm going to surmise that David Hill had bad taste in men. So, the discovery of two more victims in March of 1977 raised the body count to eight, and by that time, police had their pattern. All the identified victims had, for the most part, similar backgrounds. Most were gay. All were found nude, shot in the head with a similar weapon. Several were dismembered or otherwise mutilated. And, of course, their remains would be tied up in identical plastic garbage bags. The case really started to gain some steam in L.A. County on January 24th of 1977, when a poor highway worker tripped over a tightly wrapped object in the Lenox Boulevard tunnel underneath the San Diego freeway near LAX. I feel really bad for the highway workers at this time. So later it would come out that for a while they were calling Kearney's and his killings a freeway killer, but it turned out that there were two other serial killers under that sort of MO, so there were there were three freeway killers going at this time in the 70s. In fact, after they were put in prison, the freeway killings continued, but the trash bag killer, that all belongs to Patrick Kearney. But I feel so bad because you're just, you know, you've got a job to support your family, and you're picking up garbage, and, you know, that assholes are littering, and, man, you stumble across bags of body parts. It's absolutely terrible. So this worker, it turned out, he stumbled across the corpse of 28-year-old Nicholas Hernandez Jimenez of Los Angeles. Now, soon after, law enforcement found and identified John Otis LeMay, and this would be Kearney's final victim and the key to locking Kearney up. When detectives Al Sett and his partner Roger Wilson questioned friends of John LeMay, who was a 17-year-old out of El Segundo, they were told that LeMay liked to hang out with, quote, Pat and Dave, which would be Patrick Kearney and Dave Hill. It all happened, really, because of maternal instinct. Patricia LeMay was John LeMay's mother. He'd spent the night at a friend's house a couple of times before without telling me, she was quoted, but never on a school night. And Miss LeMay sensed that something had gone wrong. I'm not a parent, but I imagine in this day and age, you have certain types of children. If you text one and they don't respond back in a certain amount of time, you know whether that's in their character to do that or something's wrong. So obviously, Miss LeMay knew something was up. So, early the next morning, she called a classmate who suggested that she get in touch with another of John LeMay's friends, who would be a man twice his age named Dave, who lived a few miles away in Redondo Beach, which was one of the cluster of towns that lined the Pacific coast, and it was about 20 miles south of where LeMay was found. "That's the first I had heard about him," Miss LeMay said of the older man, and when she notified the El Segundo police of her son's disappearance, she told them about Dave, who is David Hill, and gave the address of that shabby white stucco house where he lived with Patrick Kearney. Miss LeMay's tip provided pretty much the only real break in the case. So Albert Rivera was murdered, but it was 2 years prior, and Patrick Kearney, again, super brilliant. Police could find nothing, but this tip finally did something. You know, after her son died, she did her snooping around, she got in touch with the friends. The friends got to the detectives, and that led them, of course, to Patrick Kearney and David Hill. John LeMay was a little bit of a different case, a different target, I guess I would say. All the victims that had been identified so far had been young men, most in their teens and early 20s, either white or Mexican-American. Most were gay and some were not, but the ones that were not were, well, we don't know, but they were little children who had not reached the age of knowing such a thing. Well, maybe they have. I don't really know the science behind it. I just don't know if a 5-year-old, for example, would know if they were gay. But, hey, I learn something new every day. But, for the most part, the victims were, like, on the fringe of L.A. They were runaways and drifters. And if they worked at all, they worked at, like, menial jobs. And until Miss LeMay, the cops could find no one who knew enough about the victims to say how they died. So in this way, Miss LeMay said, quote, "I feel like John helped." And then she paused with tears. "I hope they can find out what makes someone kill like that." So John LeMay's death, he was just a high school kid, and it's unsure his sexuality. That doesn't matter. But he was definitely not one of these throwaway kids. And he had a lot of people concerned about his well-being. So when he went missing, that shone a light on the case. And that led to, of course, Patrick Kearney and David Hill. So the detectives met with the pair at their house. They took samples of hair from the suspects as well as their poodle. And they took threads from a blue rug that matched those found by police investigators on John LeMay's body. They also found some disturbing things like blood droplets in the bathroom, microscopic flesh found on a hacksaw, and articles and books about what they called sex slayings. Well, seems open and shut so far, right? So a search warrant was issued for the pig killer and David Hill. Now, David Hill, it's, again, early on in their relationship, David Hill seemed to be an influence in that when things were harmonious, Kearney would not kill. When things were not harmonious or they were broken up, Kearney would kill. But you never really hear about David Hill being a part of this. There's not much to know about David Hill. Even today, you can't find much about him. All I could find was David Hill was born and raised in Lubbock, Texas. He was the 7th of 9 children from a poor but devoutly religious family, and they were left fatherless when his father hung himself from a jail cell in the Lubbock City Jail. He led, I guess what some of those who remembered him describe as a purposeless childhood, distinguished only by his his prowess at roller skating. But we've been working with this narrative that David Hill didn't know anything about anything, and it just sits wrong with me. It just does. And you know what? It gets even wronger. Is that a word? Yeah, wronger. So, a search warrant was issued. Fearing capture, Patrick Kearney resigned from his job, and he and Hill fled to El Paso, Texas. Remember, Hill has family there, and Kearney had once lived in Texas, so they have some connections. Hill and Kearney, they were urged by family members to turn themselves in, so they did. They showed up at the police station, and Pig Killer pointed at a poster on the wall of the two men and just said, "We're them." Like a fucking douche. Now, what irks me, Hill was cleared of having any involvement in Kearney's crimes, although some have theorized that Kearney isn't the actual killer, but took the fall for his partner, David Hill. I don't buy that. I know Kearney was the killer, but something about David Hill just doesn't sit right. I don't know if there was some plea bargain, but when you're with somebody and you live with somebody, you know when things are not on the up and up. If, like, you know, I had a girlfriend right now and I said, "Hey, babe, I'm leaving for 3 hours. She would want to know where, why, when, with who. The whole shebang. You know, you can't be in a relationship and be a serial killer for the most part. It's very hard. I know the movie Mr. Brooks, which is the most underrated serial killer movie in history. He's able to pull that off somehow. But in real life, I don't know. I just don't think it possible. So I feel like David Hill had something to do with it and got off. You have to think at the very least he knew. Even if he didn't participate, he knew that Kearney was doing this. But he got off free, which is utter legal tomfoolery. Regardless, Patrick Kearney pled guilty to the murders. In order to avoid the death penalty, Kearney confessed to murdering 32 boys and young men. Again, most of these were hitchhikers or men he picked up at gay bars during the time. After his arrest, Kearney eventually confessed to 35 murders. If true, then it means that the pig-killing, child-killing, necrophiliac Kearney would be one of the most prolific serial killers in American history. But based on his little pow-pow shooting method, I think it also makes him the biggest pussy out of them all, so he is not on the list. He cannot get into the club. Hey, Kearney, enjoy the bass sounds from the sidewalk, you infested scrotum sore. I don't know, there's just something, again, so, just shooting somebody, it's just so, it's a finality to it, but it's almost more senseless than strangling somebody, I think. I don't know if I'm explaining it right, but it's just so matter of fact and it's almost more pointless to me in a way. But both Kearney and Hill at the time had acknowledged that they were gay to the police. And this was kind of a problem because the gay community there, which was one of the largest in the nation, feared that the publicity given to the case would only reinforce that sort of anti-gay sentiment that was gaining favor at the time. So, if you haven't heard of her, there was a singer and anti-gay activist named Anita Bryant. And she was part of this Save Our Children movement, which is kind of funny. Where have we heard that before? Save the Children hashtag. You know, that can only lead to a bad place. But Anita Bryant, I think she was like a Miss America. And she was like, if that's not right, it's something. She was like the face of orange juice or something in Florida. She was a singer. And she had tremendous sway over the nation at the time. Again, 1977. Just think, you're some cis, straight, hetero, you know, middle-class white family in the Bible Belt, and Anita Bryant is on your television set telling you that gay people are evil. You know, you're prone to believe that sort of thing. That's just how it was at the time, and Anita Bryant had a lot of sway. She came very, very close to undoing a lot of things, a lot of movements you know, like a lot of the stuff accomplished by like Stonewall or Harvey Milk, that sort of thing. So it was a close call at the time, believe it or not. Nowadays, that shit doesn't fly. But yes, so this, I guess what I'm trying to say is Patrick Kearney, aside from taking these lives, he put lives in jeopardy by his association with this gay community that he, in fact, terrorized. And even after his capture, his actions remained terrorizing this community. It's a terrible thing. A prison psychiatrist who interviewed Kearney after his arrest determined that Kearney had an IQ of 180. And that's well above what's considered a genius. You know, I have an IQ of 153, and I think last I checked, that's like top 2 or 3%. And I joined Mensa like once. I never renewed it, but you know, it was it felt like an accomplishment. Now, I haven't done anything with it. I'm more of an artistic type, and you know, I'm broke. So that's not like a humble brag or anything, but you know, again, 153, that put me in a really high tier. So 180 is unfathomable. It's amazing to think about the things that Kearney could have done with that IQ had he not been just a total piece of garbage. To put it in perspective, there's a doctor, Manahel Tabet, and that is, he's an economist who is widely regarded as one of the smartest people alive. And Dr. Tabet only has an IQ of 168. But I guess this high IQ could explain why Kearney was able to get away with so many murders before he was arrested. I mean, he knew how to cover his tracks and avoid the police. And again, he was doing, you know, covering up, like that thing with the bullet, you know, from George in Tijuana. I mean, he was covering up forensics before it was even a thing. So he was always several steps ahead of the police. The only mistake that he made was he picked the wrong victim in John LeMay, because John LeMay had people around him that, you know, loved him, and not that the others didn't, but John LeMay was part of a close, tight-knit community, and when he went missing, it was noticeable. You know, another thing about that IQ, that high IQ that Kearney had, or has, I'll just say this, based on his appearance, IQ has no correlation with fashion or hygiene. So, police only charged Mr. Pig Killer with 21 counts of murder because they lacked physical evidence to charge him with the other murders he confessed to. The actual number is considered to be probably well over 43. That trash bag killer nickname, that moniker, it tells a lot. When we lose a loved one, we try to honor them with a nice urn or a gravestone. When my cat Rena died, like, oh God, I couldn't handle it. I got her the nicest little thing for her ashes, and I'm not gonna lie, I take it with me everywhere. You know, about a year ago, I sold everything I own, nice furniture, whatever, and kind of started trekking across the country to find myself. But that urn came with me. You know, we honor the things we love. But Kearney felt so little of his victims that he literally treated their remains like garbage. I mean, he sliced them up and put them in garbage bags. For such a smart guy, his empathy lives in this empty cavern of loneliness. Because the crimes were committed before California reinstated the death penalty in 1978, the maximum sentence that Superior Court Judge Paul Breckinridge Jr. could give him upon pleading guilty on February 21st of 78 to the 21 murders was concurrent life sentences for all 21 murders. Now, the next part I'd love, here's the quote that the judge said at the end of the hearing. Quote, "I would only hope that the Community Release Board will never see fit to parole Mr. Kearney because he appears to be an insult to humanity." Okay, bravo, bravo. I fucking love that. That is awesome. Insult to Humanity. It is going in my iPhone insult note thing where I put my inspiration. Woodrow, give me a... Yep. High five, Woodrow. Fantastic. Hashtag judicial slam. And you know what? The judge got his wish. Patrick Kearney continues to serve at this moment his life sentence at the Mule Creek State Prison in Ione, California, which is southeast of Sacramento. David Hill, again, can't find anything about the dude. He seems to have wandered off into obscurity, and I think got away with something there. But, yeah, Kearney is going to spend the rest of his miserable life, which is getting close to the end now, in prison. And as we know, child murderers, they do not fare well in prison. And I am not a witch, but I'm going to use witchcraft as a warlock. And I am conjuring up a spell where Patrick Kearney will step on a Lego twice an hour, and bees will continuously sting his retina every day until he dies. You know, creeps, before we end, I should say, Woodrow and I were talking about Patrick Kearney, and what a monster. This is a guy who murders children, murders anyone, kills animals, and puts his own community in danger. I cannot for the life of me understand why David Hill wanted to spend an iota, a second, a moment, a fraction of a millisecond of time with Patrick Kearney. Because Patrick Kearney is a hollowed out shit squib. He is biblically catastrophic. He is the black blood of Kali Ma. A sex tape of Patrick Kearney would be considered physical comedy. So Woodrow and I got to talking, and we've come up with a top 10 list of things we would rather do than spend 1 second with pig killer Patrick Kearney. So number 10 on that list, we decided we would rather take a bath in jalapeno juice with 100 open body sores. Woodrow, didn't you do that one time in Topeka? We also decided for number 9, we would rather develop a pizza allergy than spend 1 second with Patrick Kearney. For number 8, Woodrow decided that he would rather use sandpaper than toilet paper. You did that one time, remember? The gas station ran out? Yeah, you did. It was right outside of Memphis. Number 7, rather than spending a second with Patrick Kearney, we would rather wear pork chop underwear inside of a starving lion's den. Number 6, we would rather have Pee-wee Herman narrate our dreams. Hey, then our dreams would be nightmares. Rather than spending one moment with shit-stained Patrick Kearney. For number 5, and this kills me as an author, I would rather write a 3-book anthology using T9 Word. T9, by the way, you have to be of a certain age to remember that hellscape. Number 4. Woodrow, this is inappropriate. We would rather kiss a 70s porn star's pus-filled papilloma. Number 3 hurts me in my feels. Rather than spending a second with Patrick Kearney, I would rather have my grandmother see my search history. Number 2. We have decided that we would rather lick a gas station toilet than spend a moment with Patrick Kearney. And the last one, creeps. Number one, the most atrocious punishment and torture I can think of. But we decided we would still rather do this than spend a moment with Patrick Kearney. We would rather watch Kalu 48 hours straight with no bathroom break. Oh, the humanity. Well, Patrick Kearney, I sure hope that you're having a bad day. And on behalf of the true crime community, go fuck yourself. Well, creeps, we've done it. We have learned about and hopefully destroyed Patrick Kearney. And you know what? We have also concluded episode 20. The average podcast never makes it past 12. So Woodrow and I thank you. Woodrow, high five. And creeps, imaginary high five. Could not be done without you. If you would like to join the Creep Squad and help out like the others, please do so. You can do so by going to patreon.com/creepycrawl. You can also directly help by going to Venmo at jonathan-allen-154. And do follow me on the Bluebird. That Twitter handle is at writerjohnallen. If you put an H in there, I don't know what you're going to find, but it's not me. And of course, I will post my banty witticisms along with pictures and announcements of episode drops. Now, today's imaginary, pretend, fake outro music is the harmonious I Get Around by the Beach Boys, because I have decided to move once again back to the Sunshine State, back to the beach, and back to Florida. That's right. That said, the next episode may be delayed as I take this damn 16-hour drive again for like the fourth time. But the next time you hear from me, I'm going to have my tan game on, and it's going to be beautiful. Vitamin D for days. If there are any creeps in Florida, hey, if you know of a decent rental or if you're renting up something yourself, please hit me up, because I'm coming in blind. I'm hitting Tampa, St. Pete, and I have no plans after that. So, anybody want to be friends? Holla at me. That said, until next time, when I'm at the beach, or, you know, if that beach better have my sunny. Creeps, do not hitchhike. Do not fornicate with lifeless meat suits. Fuck Patrick Kearney. And Creepy Crawl, on.